So I have the good fortune to have in my studio this afternoon a guest. And what I wanted to open up with was sharing one of her blog posts. And again, if you'd like to get in touch with her, her contact information will be available at WUSB.FM and go to my playlist there. Every hospital and provider needs to understand the Mays decision, by Laura Lowenstein, Esquire. On September 29, 2014, the United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit decided a case brought against a collection agency that materially impacts every physician trying to collect past due medical debt for care provided in a hospital setting. The case, entitled Mark Mays versus Gulf Coast Collection Bureau, was filed by a patient against a hospital-based radiologist and its debt collection agency, who claimed that the defendants violated the Telephone Consumer Protection Act of 1991. And of course, you know they've got acronyms, so that's called TCPA. By making auto-dialed or pre-recorded phone calls to him at his cell phone number. The holding of the appellate court in favor of the last remaining collection agency defendant rested squarely on a 2008 FCC ruling, and it's this aspect of the case's holding, as opposed to the minutiae of the federal regulatory collection laws, that Laura wants to highlight. The decisive factor in determining if the defendant collection agency violated the TCPA was whether the patient was deemed to have given, quote, prior express consent, unquote, as presented in the 2008 FCC ruling, to be contacted at his cell phone number. The pertinent facts being that the plaintiff, Mark Mays, went to an emergency room in Florida with his wife, Laura. On behalf of her husband, Laura completed the hospital admissions form and provided the admitting nurse with her husband's personal and insurance information, including his cell number. As part of the registration process, Laura signed a form termed Conditions of Admission that stated A, she acknowledged receipt of the hospital's Notice of Privacy Practices, B, that the healthcare professionals involved in the care received may release the patient's healthcare information for purposes of, quote, treatment, payment, or healthcare operations, unquote, and C, services that provided by the hospital-based physicians are rendered by independent contractors that will bill the patient separately. The Notice of Privacy Practices also stated that the hospital may use and disclose information, A, about the patient to bill and collect from the patient, B, business associates with whom the hospital is contracted so that they can perform the agreed-upon services and bill the patient for such services. Now, you and I know we've seen these crazy forms all over, right? And we just sign them. We don't ask questions. Well, back to Ms. Lowenstein's article. After being admitted to the hospital through the emergency department, Mr. Mays was treated by a hospital-based radiology provider. The radiologist's biller electronically retrieved the cell number and demographic information for Mr. Mays from the hospital and proceeded to bill him. Mr. Mays failed to pay his bill, and his account was forwarded to Gulf Coast Collection Bureau, a collection agency contracted by the radiologist's parent company. Gulf Coast makes it a practice to use a predictive automatic dialer, which, in the instant case, caused the cell phone of Mr. Mays to be called between 15 to 30 times, with four messages being left about the debt. Mr. Mays then brought an action alleging such calls violated the TCPA because Gulf Coast did not have his express prior consent to make such calls to his cell number. The case ultimately came up on interlocutory appeal and resulted in a decision that profoundly impacts hospitals and the independent medical providers they contract with for care. First, the appellate court held that the 2008 FCC ruling did in fact apply to medical debt, even though the constant consent exception was originally addressed in the context of consumer debt credit. Furthermore, medical patients who fill out admission forms, like those of the hospital in this case, should expect the information contained therein to be used for billing and collection calls. With that in mind, the appellate court then focused its attention on addressing whether the 2008 FCC ruling exception applies in this scenario, since it states that prior express consent is deemed to be granted only if the wireless number was provided by the consumer to the creditor. The facts at hand show that Plaintiff Mays, through his wife, provided his cell phone number to the hospital only, and the hospital was not the creditor on this debt. So, why should hospitals and providers take away from this decision? The fact that they must review and ensure that the hospital admissions paperwork, inclusive of registration forms and their notices of privacy practices, provides for the dissemination of health information to all business associates with which it's contracted, including non-facility medical providers, A, for the purposes of rendering care or the job that they've been asked to do, and B, so that they may bill and collect from the patient for any such work. Taking a step back, implicit in this is the fact that providers need to make sure they have current business associate agreements in effect with all hospitals at which they take call or provide care, and that the term health information in all such hospital documentation where they render such services is defined as broadly as possible to include all demographic and contact information for the impairment for the patient. This is an important case that serves to support responsible efforts to collect on legitimate medical debts. While patients, hospitals, and medical providers may find the paperwork involved in emergency department admissions to be a nuisance, this case proves that it is needed to pursue, that it's required to ensure that medical providers are equipped with the legal framework and protections needed to pursue legitimate debts owed for the medical care they rendered to patients in good faith. To this end, every hospital must review their paperwork and internal admission policies and practices on an ongoing basis to ensure that every provider that steps foot in their door to care for their patients has some basic assurances they've got the legal means to get paid for the important job that they've been asked to do. So while we're going to speak to Laura, if you'd like information or you'd want to know how she can assist you more, she's got some contact information here, and I just wanted to make sure it's the same. Yes. 1-800-1-844-277-3277. Or she's got a website, www.crmcollect.com. So I'm fortunate to have Ms. Lowenstein in the studio with me this afternoon. And she is going to talk to us about why patients and providers alike need to not only understand the money in this new healthcare world we live in, but also how patients and providers can minimize some of the new money-related headaches that are now part of the healthcare equation. And since I've been speaking for so long, I'm wondering if you could introduce yourself.
Hi, Sue. Pleasure to be here. My name is Laura Lowenstein. I am an attorney. I specialize in collections for healthcare practitioners, particularly out-of-network providers. And really what I see my role today is helping patients and providers sort of navigate the healthcare world. Insurance has changed. Getting paid for care has changed. And everybody needs to sort of be equipped and on the same page so it can be as seamless and as headache-free as possible.
Okay. So if you could, you know what, can you give out your contact information?
Sure. If you need to reach me, my office number can be reached toll-free 1-844-277-3277. You could visit us online at www.crmcollect.com, or I can always be reached by email at Laura, L-A-U-R-A, at crmcollect.com.
Okay, great. So I am always interested in getting to know people and finding out their a little bit about their roots. Where did you grow up? Where did you go to school? And you know, how did you get to where you are now?
I grew up here on Long Island, actually, on the South Shore. I went to Cornell University for undergrad, and I went to law school at NYU in the city. And I really ended up here because I was a corporate attorney for many years. I did credit at a big firm. And I ended up being general counsel to some of the bigger practice groups here on Long Island. In doing so, it just became so clear that doctors needed financial help to make sure that they didn't leave money on the table. They're overwhelmed with medical care, documentation, electronic records, and I became sort of their in-house counsel, but also their go-to collections person. And that's why I formed my company, Capital Resource Management. And I've been doing collections in this arena for about 8 years. And I also have a law firm that specializes in it as well.
And you've got a slightly different take than a typical collection organization, don't you?
Yes. Medical debt is a very specialized area. I do not believe that every agency is handling it appropriately, and I think that HIPAA and the privacy laws are really important to practices. They really need to be compliant, and if they are handing out or outsourcing any of their collections, they need to vet the company that they're giving it to.
Right. And the thing that I know that I've experienced and kind of one of the ways that we met was because you engage the patient in the process, because what I see happening sometimes, it looks like the patient and the provider kind of become at odds when sometimes they almost need to team up against mm-hmm. the payer.
Yes. We have a unique model. And one of the things that I think we do very well is work with the patients almost as a mediator to get the accounts solved. So, for example, you go to see your doctor, you have one of these new high deductible plans, you get a bill from the doctor, and it's a sizable bill. You can't afford it, it falls through the cracks. For whatever reason, it falls into arrears and comes to collections. Whether it's a deductible or coinsurance or an uncovered charge, there are often ways to get the insurance company to step in and cover some of that bill. So even though you are in collections, we actually, on behalf of our doctors, will work with the patients to get the insurance companies to the table and try to absorb some of that outstanding balance. So the doctor's happy, he gets more money, the patient is happy, they owe less money, and at the end of the day, the patient-physician relationship will typically continue.
That's what I think is so key, because I know we're going to get onto a slightly different topic, but one of the things that I see happening is a lot of patients and providers wind up in almost this kind of hit and run scenario where a provider will see a patient and then never see them again because the patient can't afford the care and winds up not paying for it. And providers are becoming stickier with their patients about it because they don't want to get stuck. So it's not creating the best scenario for that patient-provider relationship that should really be focused on taking care of you.
Mm-hmm. Well, the world's changed for medicine and for doctors. And the old model of see the patient, bill the carrier, get your reimbursement doesn't exist anymore. Patients are expected to contribute. Actually, statistics say about a third of all of their medical care is now coming out of pocket. And the doctors need to be equipped to communicate with them and have a system in place to collect that. And you need to make sure your patients are not going to have sticker shock. And that means communicating with them at the upfront when services are rendered and having a staff that can explain to them what's going to be your financial responsibility. What does coinsurance mean? What does your deductible mean? Where are these numbers coming from? So they understand and can work with you instead of against you and getting the money paid.
I definitely agree with that. One of the things that I often hear, not only as a patient, but also as a consultant when I go in to meet with medical practices, is some practices had gotten into the habit of just throwing everything back to the patient and saying, no hablo, I don't know anything about your insurance. You have to call your insurance and ask those questions. And then that just doesn't set a good stage for anyone to understand where they're going to wind up.
Well, what I recommend is twofold. Patients need to be educated. They need to understand what their plan is. They need to understand what they're signing up for. But at the same time, the practices need to have a pre appointment check, so that when that patient walks in the door, there is somebody that can sit down with them and explain to them, this is what your out-of-pocket is estimated to be, and this is where it's coming from. So if that patient has questions, they could pick up the phone, take out their insurance card, call their carrier right from the office, and confirm that indeed this is what's going to be their patient responsibility. It's a better practice than hitting them with a bill after the fact, and they had no idea that this was going to be on their shoulders.
Actually, I would encourage listeners to stay tuned, because I'm going to be reading a story that I dug up about exactly that. A particular practice goes through the step-by-step of how they've been able to do that. So stay tuned for if you're interested in play-by-play details on that. But that's exactly right. So now you also have come across, you've been doing this for quite a few years, but there's been a lot of changes in the last, probably just this last year, with the advent of the Affordable Care Act. And I also would like to just represent to people who might be listening, us New Yorkers are in a unique situation, because we've got a state that was really involved in all of this, really worked with the insurance companies to put together exchange plans. They participated. The Medicaid program, Medicaid waivers have opened up to allow a lot of people that were previously uninsured to be insured. And a lot of people in other states, as much as we might grumble about what we've wound up with, I don't think everybody's in quite the same position that we're in. So what we're going to be talking about today is going to be New York's focused.
Yes, the Affordable Care Act has changed everything. And I think people are only first starting to have to feel the impact in their pocketbook, and to feel the impact when they're trying to get doctors and they realize that doctor's not in your network anymore, or this referral doesn't work for you anymore because that specialist is no longer in your network. And it's a new world that's going to affect everybody.
Well, I can even just tell you my personal experience. I am covered under a plan under one of probably the preeminent employers here on Long Island. So we consider ourselves to have pretty fancy butt insurance. And we just had to go through our annual check everything out. And there was immense pressure to get us to change to a new plan. As a matter of fact, if we didn't act like the lazy bones that we have been in the past and did nothing, we would have not stayed with our current plan. We would have been moved over to this new plan. So there we are, the last hours of having to fill this out, going through, and the concept of narrow networks, which is, I think, what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And what that means is insurance companies are not participating with the same providers they were participating with before. Not only are insurance companies not participating with providers, but a lot of providers are now saying, you know what, I just can't deal with 40 different insurance companies anymore. Let's start picking off the ones we're not going to participate with anymore. So it is coming from both directions.
First, providers can't afford to take some of these new insurance plans. Their reimbursement rates just are not high enough. Also, they're letting in Medicaid patients, but Medicaid actually has the special rule that a lot of physicians aren't aware of, where the reimbursement rates were matching temporarily Medicare rates for preventative care. That's sunsetting at the end of 2014. So they're also limiting the Medicaid population they have to take.
I thought that was for everything, not just preventative care. I thought Medicaid reimbursement rates were boosted up to match Medicare rates as part of the ACA going forward. And I'm going to have to look into this, because I'm learning something new here. Go ahead.
Okay. On top of that, when the people are getting these plans, overwhelmingly, they are choosing high deductible plans, lower premium, high deductibles. On top of that, employers are now saying that upwards of 40 to 60% of the plans they're going to offer their employees in 2014, 2015, and beyond are going to be high deductible plans. So it's changed where this patient responsibility is falling and it's becoming more and more in the corner of self-pay. So patients need to understand what that means. On top of it, I just want to point out all of the premiums where they are right now are going to continue to climb even for the same policy, because there's a program in the federal government now that's reinsuring these carriers to make sure they don't have a loss. That's going to stop. And so all of that loss, all of that money that was coming in has to be made up somewhere, and it will be made up in premiums. So it's only going to get tougher.
So I'm just going to go back to my own personal example again. So when you're calculating how much your insurance is going to cost you, I think a lot of people don't factor in the entire picture, which is your premiums, your copays, your deductible, your coinsurance, and most importantly, what's not covered, because there are things that you're going to have to go out and get on your own because they're not covered for whatever reason. So when you put all that together, the high deductible plans often can be or appear to be a terrific savings. And I think that's something that a lot of people who have switched over into the affordable care plans might be losing sight of. Because just because your premiums are dramatically less, which so many people found because so many of them are subsidized, you're going to pay for it one way or the other. So you're either going to be paying a higher premium or you are going to be paying a higher deductible, typically.
Well, one of the examples of what's happening sort of clinically is when people know they have these high deductible plans, they're actually cutting back on how many times they would see a doctor. They are waiting until something is severe enough that it's worth going into their pocket and eating some of their deductible. And what's happening is they're waiting till things get more serious, which often requires a hospital admission or an ER visit. And all of a sudden, they now owe, instead of a few hundred dollars towards the deductible, they owe $5,000 as a result of getting sort of more severe and involved care.
I'm just going to play devil's advocate with you for a minute there, Laura, because one of the things that I see or I argue about, and I see this in my peers and other people I know, I think that the other thing it's going to do is, if you've got a little bit of skin in the game, you might think twice about running to the doctor every time you or your kid has the sniffles, just because in the past, because you had no skin in the game, it didn't matter. So why not go? So I think that there's both sides of that. I think that people who might have been a little too cavalier about their utilization of the healthcare system. I'm going to give you a perfect example. You want to know who's guilty of this? My mother. She sits there and laughs and says, ha ha, I'm on Medicare. I pay nothing. I'm going everywhere they tell me to go.
Right.
Which is, I mean, it's crazy, but.
Yeah. And I think ultimately you have to have that balance. I do agree. You definitely have the people that perhaps almost used the healthcare system as their pharmacy. You know, I'll go to the doctor just to see if I need a prescription. Maybe they didn't need to go. And then you have the reverse side, which they do need to go, but they're holding off on going. So it's a question of where's that line and where's that balance? And do people understand when truly they do need healthcare and what that cost is going to be, and factor that into their everyday decisions?
So let me ask you another question, because you're probably used to working with people who aren't in the I'm taking my kid to the doctor because he has the sniffles too many times category. You're probably seeing people who are in much more serious situations, and you're talking a lot more dollars. Mm-hmm. Are you finding that these plans also have out-of-pocket maximums?
They do. Yes, they do. But in emergency room situations, there is not. So that's been a very big quandary for people who go to the ER and they need to have a specialist come in, and that specialist is not contracted. Most of the plans will step in, and that's what we do a lot of. We settle those accounts. But that's changed with a lot of these exchange plans, and we're having success in mediating it using certain benchmarks, but people often don't realize that the doctor they're seeing or the specialist they're seeing in or outside of an emergency room scenario sometimes won't be contracted, won't be in the network, and then there really is no cap of what their out-of-pocket could potentially be. So that's a situation that the right doctor with the right partner is making sure that works for everybody, including the patient, but you never know, and the patients need to be prepared.
Well, the devil's advocate side of that again, and I hope you forgive me, is the other thing that presents itself in that scenario is some of these doctors think it's the wild, wild west, and they can charge whatever incomprehensible fees they want for these out-of-network services. And it's almost like they're sitting there saying, nah, nah, insurance company, I can charge you anything I want because you don't own me.
I can tell you, I know that perception exists. I work with a lot of these physicians, and I don't see that. I really see them using benchmarks and what they've gotten paid in the past. They're not escalating their fees in a vacuum subjectively. They're really trying to do it in a responsible manner and settle it in a responsible manner. And I very rarely see patients who are cooperative ending up in collections for a large amount. It's typically worked out, but it requires a provider's office that's informed and has someone doing it, and a patient who doesn't put their head in the sand and wants to sort of get the insurance carrier involved and get involved in the process and make this work as well.
Right. So if you're listening, you're here listening today on a Friday afternoon. It's 1:36 in the afternoon. And my guest this afternoon is Laura Lowenstein Esquire. She is the president of Capital Resource Management, a professional debt recovery firm, and a managing member of Laura J. Lowenstein and Associates, a judgment enforcement law firm. And if you have questions for her, you can call her in her office, obviously, when she's not on the air talking to me, at 1-844-277-3277, or you can reach her online at www.crmcollect.com, and I'll have all that information available in my playlist. We are talking this afternoon about a lot of the changes that people are seeing. Laura's area of expertise is walking the tightrope between medical providers who are trying to get paid for services they provided to patients, who are trying to get their insurance companies to hold up their end of the bargain. And she's become quite an expert at helping to walk that tightrope. We'll be back in a couple of minutes. We're going to listen to another cut here from our featured musical artist of the afternoon, and that's the Michael Jazz Trio.
Oh,
the Michael Jazz Trio, three young gentlemen in our local community here who get out and bang out that super cool sounding music, and you can definitely catch them out. I've seen them at Roast. I believe they've played up on the North Shore at some of the different, since they're all underage, you typically will see them at the non-bar venues, but anyway, definitely keep your eye out for them. Terrific trio of young men. My guest this afternoon is Laura Lowenstein Esquire, and she and I are talking about so many of the changes that have come across when it comes to the money in insurance. And while we've talked quite a bit about the Affordable Care Act, the Obamacare, and the exchange plans, I can just say from my own personal experience, over the past year or so, it isn't just in those plans. It's all across. I don't know anyone who's immune to it. I think some people have been a little sheltered from it. I think of the people that belong to great unions, to real strong unions. I think they've had to give, quote unquote, give away less. But you know, the fact of the matter is we are all utilizing so much more healthcare than we ever did before. Really and truly, miracles of modern medicine. There are so many things that you either didn't even know you had before in the past, or if you did, there wasn't this turnkey solution to it. And now, you know, we all want everything, so it's just not free. So there's got to be a way to be able to connect it all together. And I think we've seen recently attempts to try to do that. But, you know, it's not all smooth. It's not all working out perfectly. And, you know, what we wanted to talk about today was both the patient and the provider side of things. What can you do in this new environment to help preserve your own end of the situation? And, of course, the whole thing with healthcare today in this country is a triad. So you have the patient, you have the provider, and then you have the person who pays for it, which is the insurance company. So it's always two against one, no matter how you look at it. And what's happened is, or what seems to me, the insurance company's kind of thrown everything back, and they get the patient and the provider at odds with each other. And maybe it's time for the patients and the providers to kind of team up against the insurance companies, so maybe they can have a little bit more leverage in that regard. So, Laura, if you could just give us again a little introduction to yourself and your contact information, and then I'd like to talk about from a patient's angle.
Okay. I am president of a collection agency, Capital Resource Management. We do specialize in healthcare debt recovery. With that being said, we also come into our clients, especially the providers, and go into their office and revamp how they're doing their financial policies to not only make sure they get every cent that they can, but to make sure they're being compliant with the best practices that their medical organizations want them to comply with. With that said, even though I am an advocate and I do work on behalf of doctors, from what I do, I really see the things that the patients should do to help themselves as well, to avoid being at the other end of a big collection account. One of the best things they can do is understand their policy. When you sign up, ask all the questions. What is the most I can owe? What is the biggest, most deductible I can owe? Where is my coinsurance going to fall? How much copay do I have every time I see a doctor? And can this change? Is this fixed? What is my network like? I want to see the network of doctors before I sign up. And one of the biggest things is when you do go and see a doctor, and it's a new doctor, ask them up front, what is your financial policy? How do you look to collect the money owed from me? Do I have to pay at the time of service before I even see the doctor? Do I get billed? Do I have payment options? Can I do payment plans? Are you going to require that I put a credit card on file? If you're not comfortable with that, a lot of offices won't even see you. So it's really a matter of knowing the payment expectations before you step foot into that doctor's office. And any doctor's office that's serious about its own patients and its own finances is going to be able to respond to all those questions.
So I'm going to just hop in here again with one of my own personal stories. As you can see, I've been through a little bit of a procedure myself, and I had some surgery done on my wrist. And went for my follow-up visit yesterday, and the doctor says to me, I want you to get this special thing to put on. It'll help with the healing process, and it'll also help protect that area once we take the bandages off. And you'll, you know, wear that for a certain amount of time. It'll help with everything. And conveniently, they have in, like, it's, I think they try to make it look like it's a separate area, but it's barely a separate area. A DME company there that is vending. Mm-hmm. But I asked, well, you know, how much is this going to cost? How does this all work? They had everything right there. Answered all my questions, and it was great. I felt comfortable because I at least knew what I was going to be in for.
Right. It's interesting because people thought, patients actually had reported that they did not want to have those conversations because they felt, well, if the doctor thinks I can't afford this care, I'm not going to get the best care. That anecdotally is not what is vetting out in reality, because what's happening is the doctor's offices want to have this conversation. They want to be on the same page as the patient. They don't want to feel that they're sending out bills that the patients are completely blindsided by. And they're not going to withhold care once they understand that the finances are going to be resolved and taken care of. So just like your personal experience, you felt good going to that doctor and didn't feel that you were going to get some surprise bill after the fact. And that bodes well for the whole sort of patient-physician relationship.
So you want to hear my bad story?
Okay.
I'll tell you my bad story. So my doctor this is a totally different thing. I'm going to see, and I hadn't seen him in a few years, and I thought he moved, but it turns out he went with another group. And he didn't just go with another group. He went with a hospital group. And all this was just not so transparent to me. So when he says, well, I want you to get an x-ray, because you know that's how the insurance works. You have to get an x-ray. Then once you get the x-ray, then you go for the MRI, and then we work our way from there. And as before, he sent me to the place across the street from where he was located, and it looked like the standalone, and I thought it was a standalone, and it wasn't. He had sent me to the hospital, to a hospital-based radiology service. And as you probably know, the fees are considerably higher mm-hmm. at a hospital-based facility than a standalone facility. So I'm happy for them that they got an extra $3, but my share of that, my coinsurance of that, was also considerably more. Mm-hmm. And that I was really annoyed by that. Because there wasn't something prominent that said, you know, we're a division of X hospital.
Well, that's the transparency factor. And that's been an issue with a lot of patients. And that is actually being addressed by, since we're talking specific to New York, New York has actually passed a new law that's going to take effect next year, the end of March, beginning of April. Part of that law is the requirement of the posting on websites when you go for services of that particular information. What carriers do we take? What do we participate in? Where could your responsibility be? And that is to address the exact issue that you just spoke about.
I almost lost my mind because for that particular service, I think I have to pay 30%. So 30, you know, x-rays, they don't pay a doctor's office or, you know, a standalone facility that much for x-rays. It would have been, I don't know, maybe $150, and my share of that would have been whatever that was. Well, they paid the hospital like $1,200. Mm-hmm. So my 30% mm-hmm. of that $1,200 was more than they would have paid the standalone facility in total.
Right. To take a step back, if any of the listeners don't know how coinsurance is figured out.
I'm sorry. That's a good thing to go through. Let's do that.
You know, when you hear that word coinsurance, you think, well, copay, a fixed amount. Coinsurance is actually a floating amount that is typically a percentage of what your insurance company paid that doctor. So if that doctor does have a higher reimbursement rate, you will have a higher coinsurance responsibility. So yes, that's a very real concern for a lot of patients.
Oh, I was so frustrated by that. Okay. So those are some of the things that we can do as patients to be more aware of where we're going to, what we're going to owe, what our piece of the nut's going to be, and that we, if we do need the care or we do want the care and we want to work something out, try to see if your provider is going to be approachable on that. Now, you've come across some interesting situations where the insurance company has been kind of pushed back into the arena to have to help the patients.
Well, one of the things that I've made central to what I do is educating patients on behalf of the providers. The insurance companies are going to be much more responsive to patients than they are to providers. Believe it or not, that's the name of the game. So over the years, as patients have sort of gotten these balance bills or gotten billed, they either pay it, they don't pay it, they go to collections. It was sort of a, an automatic response. What's happened is I've taken some providers' offices and we have actually taken it to another level where we've educated and armed the patients with information that they can use to talk to their insurance company and get the insurance company to step in and help them with their if it's a financial hardship, if it's a union, what can they do to help themselves pay this bill and have the carrier step in? Taking that a step further, by patients doing that, the power that the patients have, I think, is something they don't understand. And as this has gone on, some of the insurance companies like GHI has gotten in a lot of trouble from the state for leaving the patients out there to dry with these big bills.
Tell us a little bit more detail about that story, because I think the whole GHI thing might be something that some of us are more familiar with in the industry, but I don't know that it made the news.
Okay, so this is very recent, just about a month and a half ago. Historically, GHI would reimburse, let's use emergency care as an example that people can understand. Your son cuts himself, needs stitches. I'm a mother. I would rush my son to the emergency room if my provider, provider wasn't available or the pediatrician said you need stitches. You go, you have a specialist come in, and you get a bill. Those bills and those specialists who tend to be out of network would bill, and I'm not talking about, inflammatory bills, but what those services are actually the reasonable and customary charges for those services. GHI was one of the insurance companies that would say to their members, this is what we pay. You are left with the remainder. And what they paid was commensurate with a percentage of Medicare or even Medicaid in some situations, leaving these patients high and dry with these enormous bills. And these providers, quite honestly, can't write off this level of a bill. They needed to hit some sort of minimum standard.
And frankly, you get those kind of bills, and sometimes patients literally can't afford it. It's not a nut that they could crack.
Yes. It is one of these situations where are there patients who can afford it but don't want to, because it is a cultural feeling that medical care is an entitlement, and the shift hasn't yet happened to understanding that you have to pay for some of that. So putting that aside and looking at patients who truly have a financial hardship and they can't afford that, the Attorney General came in and said, you know what, GHI, you can't just walk away from this. These patients had no idea they were going to be stuck with this bill. So if the patients get billed and they come to you, GHI, for assistance, you are now mandated to help them. You have to step in and you need to negotiate with this provider's office, and you need to settle this account for them or make good faith efforts to do so. That will only happen if a patient is educated and informed and knows they should call GHI, what should they say, and how they can make GHI come to their defense.
Now, this is something that you've written about in your blogs, right?
These lines of information.
And if somebody wanted to get on your, is it something that you send out, or do they have to come to you to get this?
I post it freely right on the website.
Okay. So if you wanted to learn a little bit more about some of these, I would definitely check out the website. It's www.crmcollect.com. And I check in on it, so I've learned quite a bit myself from reading along. So what is it that some of these providers can do? Let's take that GHI story as a bridge to, you know, the patients can be empowered and can help out. What can providers do? And I know one of the things we've seen it here, and it's something I've talked about before, when you have a health system like North Shore Health System, or LIJ, as they were formerly known, they write their own ticket. They have negotiating power. They are like the whatever, the giant gorilla, and they don't suffer with lousy reimbursement rates because they get to call the shots. They're so big in the market. Now, Stony Brook Hospital, in the scheme of things, is a dinky player today. They don't have the same leverage. So there's been quite a few times in the news where we've read that Stony Brook is dropping Empire, or they're not taking the Affordable Care Act plans. But meanwhile, really what was happening is they were just trying to use their meager negotiating leverage to get some better rates, is really what it came down to. So look at the little providers, the solo docs or the smaller groups. They've got even less leverage, so they're going to get lousier rates. So what can providers do to try to not be so at the mercy of those insurance companies?
Well, if a provider chooses to be in-network, they're automatically going to be, to some extent, at the mercy of the insurance companies.
Unless they're one of certain specialties where the insurance hasn't filled up the panel yet.
And some of the new laws will help providers, because right now, if you have a PPO or an EPO plan, you do not have to have a sort of extensive network or guarantee of network that an HMO does. Again, the new law that's happening in New York is going to make providers and make insurance companies guarantee those networks. So those providers who need to now come into those networks will have more leverage as they negotiate to negotiate better rates up front. And they should be aware that they're going to be needed now for the insurance companies to satisfy their obligations. And they should use that to their advantage. On top of that, I know a lot of people and a lot of providers have billing companies, and they just send the claims off to the billers and they get their reimbursements, but nobody's really taking ownership of denials. No one's taking ownership of appealing insurance denials. And this is the if a provider's office is listening, this is one of the single most important pieces of advice I can give. Appeal, appeal, appeal. Review your denials, do your appeals, get your patient authorizations to do the appeals. Use that sort of ability to make the insurance companies justify why they're saying what they're saying. And often you will get more money on every one of those claims that you are just leaving and filing away.
Now, is that something that you do as well, or is that just something you suggest they get better at?
We actually do that as well. We do that for more of the out-of-network providers, but it's something that I believe so strongly in that I've made that a part of the services that we will provide.
Can I tell you something that I came across the other day?
Sure.
This was last week. Actually, maybe it was a little more than a week ago, maybe last month. I'm working on a project for a client. And they get mad at me sometimes, but I always want to see everything, right? I want to see the forms the patient filled out. I want to see the bill you submitted. I want to see the doctor's notes. I want to see the EOB. Mm-hmm. And if you've done an appeal, I want to see what you sent in and what they sent back. Can I tell you that this particular entity was doing appeal after appeal, like double secondary and tertiary appeals? You want to know what the appeal was? A fax cover sheet of the exact same thing they submitted the first time.
Yep. I will tell you, my appeal.
Oh, my goodness. And then they're surprised that they weren't paid.
That they were denied. The appeals that I do are literally, first of all, they are specific to that claim, to that patient. We actually will break down the codes and justify what was done and show the backup for those codes. And on top of it, we'll use within our appeal benchmarks to say, carrier, you're not even hitting usual and customary for this geographic zip code. Or carrier, if you're a home plan and you deny this under ERISA, we're entitled to know the basis of your denial, and we want to see all those documents.
So just so anybody who's listening that lost track right there, she just made her first jump over into legalese mumbo jumbo.
Sorry, yes.
No, that's okay. But that you're exactly right. And I know what I'll do when I'm helping someone with appeals is I'll take it to a certain level. But since I'm not an attorney, when it gets into that level of things, we definitely do refer things to an attorney's office when it's a big enough nut.
Well, I'll also say to the providers, have your office call the insurance companies. A lot of the insurance companies will be much more responsive to an appeal that's signed by the patient than one that's signed by the doctor. And we will actually, in those scenarios, especially with some of the unions, we will help the patients to do their own appeal and become their own advocate. And that is so effective for some of these plans, and people don't even realize that that's an option.
So you're listening to WUSB Stony Brook. My guest today is Laura Lowenstein Esquire, and she has become a expert helping to marry the whole financial woe and the financial disconnect between patients and providers and insurance companies. And I'm trying to think of what else. We've been talking for quite a while now. I originally invited Laura in for half an hour, and we've been going at it for some time now. But this is just so important. I'd also like to say we've been talking a lot about the Affordable Care Act, or Obamacare, as it's become more commonly known. And next week, I am going to be here with an expert on procuring that care, because one of the things that's happened is people don't wind up with the best plan for them. And I think you've probably seen that over the past year.
I'll tell you, we have collection accounts where we have patients who we're trying to work with and get this settled who will say to us, I had no idea I had an exchange plan. They don't even know that they have a marketplace plan. They thought they had a quote-unquote private plan. It's and then they find themselves at a crossroads. I want to get off this plan and get a new plan, and I don't know how to do that.
And you know, I'll tell you, I've seen the opposite. I've seen where people went to a broker or something, and they thought they were going to get an exchange plan. Those are the premiums or the commission that the broker makes on the affordable care plans are much, much less than on the traditional plans, which is one of the entire selling points, making things more affordable for everyone along the line. Now, the brokers weren't happy about that because their base of things is not as high as it was before. But so what's happened is apparently quite a few of them were steering people to more traditional plans when that might not have been the best one for the patient.
And that's a caveat to know your broker. Make sure you have an insurance broker who has a large enough portfolio that they're more interested in getting you the right plan than squeezing out the most money from signing you up.
So I'm just going to give a little bit of a pitch to the show next week. The gentleman who's coming on, his name is Jason Sammel, and he is a broker, and he is an environmentalist and a social activist and all this other crazy stuff, and he has just made it his business to know he's so excited about this whole concept of, you know, this for a lot of people, as much as they might complain about Obamacare or how it was implemented or the problems that it has, it really is a step towards universal health care, which, you know, some people think it's a good idea, a lot of people don't. But so he's so personally impassioned by it that he made it his business to understand the whole landscape and understand all the different things from very early on. And he, I even listened to some of them. He would get into arguments with the people at the insurance companies before the people at the insurance companies understood how the whole thing was working out. So he'll be my guest, and we're hoping to be able to take your calls and answer your questions, because this month starts the open enrollment period. So if you got stuck with an exchange plan and you want to switch back to a standard insurance, now's the time to do it. If you missed out on an exchange plan because you couldn't get your act together or for whatever reason, and you're ready to jump in the pool, now is the time to do it. If you're not happy with your plan and you want to see if there's a better one that might suit you, I'll tell you another situation that happened to a lot of people. The North Shore Health System, the LIJ plan, has a terrific rate because they knew they were going to get lots of people in it. They've got lots of providers. They've got 14 hospitals. But if you live in Riverhead, where are you going to go in that network?
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to be able to be as effectively served in that network as somebody that lives in Great Neck.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the other things, you decide you got in a plan and it isn't quite for you. So I'm looking forward to that. On that, along those lines, I want to take another minute here and play another song. Do you have a couple minutes to hang around?
Sure.
Okay. So for those of you who have listened before, this is my little Boyfriend with Benefits song. This is where we are today.
I'm a busy entrepreneur.
Ay, ay, ay. You know, we have to put it on mute here until the mandatory advertisement. Oh, here we go. Here we go.
I need you, boy. You got me covered. I see you checking me out on the dance floor. I know you want me, boy, but you got something I want more. See, these are troubled times, a bad economy. I got some health issues and medicine, well, it ain't free. Well, I don't care about no diamond rings. I don't need none of those fancy things. Well, if you really wanna be my man, boy, you gotta put me on your healthcare plan. Your healthcare plan. Let's start a family, and you can be the boss. Just prove to me that you've got Anthem, Kaiser, or Blue Cross. I can't afford a doctor, I need you, can't you see? When I get sick, all I can do is go to WebMD. Well, you don't gotta kiss me, and I don't need no hugs. Just want a discount when I need to get prescription drugs. I need a flu shot, baby, I got a tricky knee. Ain't seen a dentist since September of 2003.
Well, I don't care about the diamond ring. If you really wanna be my man, just let me get all up in your healthcare plan. Yeah.
You wanna be my dependent girl?
What you got, boy?
Let me break it down. I hear you say you love me, I wanna know for sure.
Yeah.
You gotta prove it for I put you on my PPO. Cause my copays are modest, girl, you know that's true. My pre-existing condition is I'm in love with you. My coverage is extensive, they pimp my policy. You want some LASIK, baby?
Yeah.
I got full optometry. Shiatsu massage, all day for you and me.
Yeah.
Don't sweat the payments, girl, it's covered cause it's therapy.
Oh, how much is your deductible? How much is your deductible?
Well, I don't care about no diamond
ring. How much is your deductible?
I don't need none of those fancy things.
How much is your deductible?
If you really want to be my
man, how much is your deductible?
Get all up in your healthcare.
How much is your deductible?
You want some acupuncture?
I don't care about no diamond
ring.
How about the diet?
I don't need none of those fancy things.
How much is your deductible, girl?
If you really want to be my
man, how much is your deductible?
Get all up in your healthcare plan.
All right, so Laura and I are sitting here cracking up over that song, because not only are the words funny, but the video is great, right? Isn't it a great video?
Yes.
It's like this, as you probably can imagine, super hot chick. And she's just dancing her stuff under the nose of this guy trying to get on his healthcare plan.
Oh my gosh.
So it's a little levity for this, you know, this tight situation that so many people are finding themselves in today. And, you know, people get married for citizenship in the past. Well, now people are getting married for healthcare. Yep. Yes. Or not getting divorced for healthcare, right?
Oh, that I see constantly. Right.
People sit there and say, why are you staying with that jerk? Well, you don't understand. You can't afford it.
Exactly. Divorce is not an option.
All right. So my guest this afternoon has been Laura Lowenstein, Esquire, and she is the president of Capital Resource Management. And they really help try to build the bridge between the three different legs, if you will, of our current healthcare system. And that's made up of providers, people who provide the medical care, patients, the people who receive the medical care, and the insurance companies who are in charge these days. And it isn't just insurance companies, it's government insurance as well, of holding together the pot of money and redistributing it. So what would you like to wrap up with? Because we got to get on to other things here.
I think I would just like to wrap up with a word to providers. I think that I see a lot of very good practices trying to do good work, trying to manage everything and all the regulatory nonsense that, quite frankly, is thrown their way every year, every month now. And I think the takeaway is there are very concrete things you can do in your practice to clean it up, to train your staff, to have the right paperwork, to understand insurance and have a system, a practice management system that will let you make sure that you are collecting everything that you're entitled to. And if you hit a wall, have the right partner to outsource your collections who's going to make sure that they can manage it in a way that's going to represent your practice in the best light.
And I would say that's not just kind of your own pitch,
right,
a little bit, but I would say in whatever avenue you might find yourself in and you might want somebody to help you out with, find somebody who is an expert in mm-hmm. that arena.
Yes.
So I know, for example, one of the ways I met Laura is we happen to belong to this same group called Healthcare Introductions. And what it is, it's a super informal networking group of people who work primarily with medical practices. And it's, you know, a perfect example is CPA, right? Why would you work with a regular CPA when you could work with a CPA who is really in tune with what does the crazy finances of a medical practice look like? It's really not like any other business.
No, form your team. Get your trusted advisors who know your practice, who have experience, and who are going to be in it with you. And a lot of what I do, I don't even charge for because it's part of servicing these physicians. And I think any trusted advisor is going to sort of be invested in your practice and want to see that you're growing it and doing with it what you want as a provider and making sure that you're as successful as you can be.
Well, on that fact, I will just say amen and thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Sue. It's been really nice.
I would say a